If you don't like what we tell you to believe in, we'll kill you.
Get the kikes out of Christmas. Let's leave no room, no hope for forgiveness. Let's win this war on Christmas. Let's take the kikes right out of existence. Get the kikes out of Christmas. No more ranking class, Irving Berlin in my ass. Blow out your menorah, Christmas ain't kosher. Get the kikes out of Christmas. No more songs about consumerism. Let's win this war on Christmas. Let's take the kikes right out of existence. Get the kikes out of Christmas. No more chestnuts, roast bitter almonds. Fuck your silver bells, shitty sidewalks. No one's seeing mommy kissing Santa Claus. Not no more. Another Yuletide show. Our Auschwitz Santa got one Birkenau, one Belzec. So people might die on Kilmo Treblinka. From the lack of roof holes to the blue stained walls. Let's gas away, gas away, gas away your own. Get the kikes out of Christmas. Leave no room, no hope for forgiveness. Let's win this war.
Hello, thank you for tuning in to the free edition of The Daily Shoah on therightstuff.biz. If you're hearing this message, it's because you're not subscribed, and we need you to change that. See, therightstuff.biz is 100% listener-funded. We have no sponsors, we have no mega donors, we have no shadowy helicopter donors coming in and saving our ass. We need you to support us in our efforts to do these shows. So please navigate to therightstuff.biz/paywall and follow the instructions, create an account, create an order. We sell subscriptions monthly, quarterly, twice yearly, and yearly. It's a little bit complicated because of the rampant censorship we've had to endure, so you'll have to pay with cryptocurrency, money orders by mail, e-checks, or you can navigate to my Odyssey channel, create an account on Odyssey, and you can pay me with your credit card. Thank you, and enjoy the first half of the show. Thank you.
This is Tedious on therightstuff.biz.
Yes. Welcome back. Merry Christmas again to all. You know, I wrote that song while I had long COVID.
Oh.
That was the long
COVID. I've never really gotten over long COVID.
Well, I don't know if I did, but I know I wasn't over long COVID when I wrote that song. I wrote that song in December of 21.
About
That was long COVID like in bong September. COVID. What, bong COVID? Where you just like smoke weed?
You keep smoking weed, so you keep getting COVID.
You keep slonking COVID. I mentioned
you keep slonking. You just put COVID in the pipe and just like.
I mentioned
you like you hold it. And you like tell your friend like clear.
I mentioned Irving Berlin. I mentioned Irving Berlin in the lyrics there. That is, I hate that fucking kike so much.
I really hate him.
He is behind. I've never seen it before. Last year, for the first time, I watched the White Christmas movie, you know, Bing Crosby, and I was extremely disappointed about how that was just a bunch of, like, nightclub singing dance act schlock and then one Christmas song at the end. Like, I was so pissed off that I sat through, like, 90 minutes of these stupid fucking, like, basically they should be sidewalk performers, but Jews snapped up, come down to the Copacabana and do your little kicks and your tap dance act, and it's, all the songs are about that. And so I don't know why I decided to give Holiday Inn a chance last night, and it was the same thing. And it's all written, all music and lyrics by Irving Berlin. It's like, here's a Christmas movie.
Holiday Inn, when is that from? That's another one of these same types.
It's Fred Astaire.
In the same vein.
It's Fred Astaire and Bing Crosby, and it's that one's in black and white, so I guess it's older than the other one. Unless I don't know, I was watching it in black and white, right? But it sucks. Yeah. It's the same fucking thing. Like here's like their sleazy, slimy like agent. Here's the three of them have a song and dance act. One of them's gonna marry the girl. Oh, she dips out and marries the other guy, and it's like, it's just like all about their nightclub acts and their nightclubs and their this and their that. And it's Holiday Inn, and
they could, like a theme to Jewish entertainment. It's from awful. The era. It's like, there's a lot of stuff like that.
And as you look back on it, it's like there's nothing about the only redeeming factor is that every now and then they do let Bing sing. He sang White Christmas and he sang Happy Holidays in Holiday Inn. But then, like, they do a blackface number on President Lincoln's birthday. Like, because the gag is, like, oh, he runs Holiday Inn. It's only open on holidays. So they're having, like, a fucking gala for Lincoln's birthday. And, like, they're all dressed up like niggers doing, like, mammy dancing and singing about how great Lincoln is. Fucking terrible. Mm.
Abe Lincoln, yeah.
Abe Lincoln.
Once and future president, Abe Lincoln.
So that was my evening last night. Fucking horrible shit. Horrible shit. It's like showbiz is like that kind of, it's showbiz. Like fucking Desi Arnaz, Lucille Ball kind of crap. It's like having the big band swing music.
That was like a lot of showbiz about showbiz going on at that point. And I guess never really stopped. It just sort of changed.
Yeah.
Because it went from like showbiz about showbiz with all like that kind of crap to like, remember like the Gary Shandling show where he's a show about a guy with a talk show, and then like, and he was a Jew, of course. I'm almost like that guy had to be a Jew, right? If Gary Shandling wasn't a Jew, like I don't know what I am. I can't imagine that he wasn't.
I guess I could bother to look that up.
Yeah, I'm sure he definitely was. And now they still do stuff about stuff like shows about doing shows.
Yeah, he's
so
Jewish.
I've always basically
Gary Emanuel Shandling, born into a Jewish family in Chicago.
He's definitely, there's just no way that guy's not Jewish. I mean, given the whole persona about him and everything, so. It's sort of why I've always sort of preferred sci-fi and fantasy stuff, because it's like that way you can't really do that kind of crap. And it's also, there's something sort of inherently, I don't know. That's just my preference of things.
Same.
Yeah. Sci-fi is like, TV is like awfully bad though. But now you have like sci-fi TV is just like a vector for like transsexual, transhumanist, like gay shit. Like everyone in the future is gay and has like different bodies and they have different kinds of sex.
Sci-fi is worse for that.
Wasn't that what
shit,
Westworld was about? Or what was that other one where they changed bodies recently? That show.
I'm sure you guys remember. Oh, the one with the chip in the back of the head. That was a couple of years
I'm
back.
I'm changing.
I watched
my
that one.
Yes.
I don't remember what that was called, but it sucked. I mean, it could have been cool.
It was about, like...
Yeah, like you come back as, like, a beaner grandma. Like, okay, cool, thanks.
Abuela.
I don't remember what that show was called, but I remember we all watched
it. It's about Altered Carbon?
Yes, I think it was. Yeah.
That's what it was.
No, I liked the first season of Altered Carbon, but then they did the thing where the second season he's black, and everybody's like,
I never watched that,
I assumed everybody was always just doing gay shit. Like, I'm changing into a different body to have a different type of rated sex.
No, didn't really do that, no. And they had a white lead, and it was a fairly well-received show. And the second season, they cast some nigger, and everybody just noped right the fuck
out. They already did
it.
The thing. Like, the white lead was pining for this woman that he loved so much, and it's just this, like, rope-haired nigger, and you're just like,
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sorry, I just don't believe that this is like his ideal lovebird that he can't get over, this like ugly monkey faced fucking wretch.
Well, it's like doing commando shit. He was supposed to be Asian. Remember, he was originally Asian, and then he got the white guy's body.
I just assume like, no, the white, he's a white guy's body, so I'll watch the show. So he's going to be a white guy. Like, I don't take your Asian copes. But
no, that was one of those Netflix.
I guess they could use it as like a vehicle to explore the mind body dichotomy and shit like that. I think they're probably doing that kind of crap, right?
Yeah. Well, you don't need to do that. Like, if you have a
body dichotomy,
like if there's a mind body dichotomy, that means you're insane and you need to be like locked up or put on some kind of drug. You need therapy. You don't need
I'm dichotomizing my body.
Like, I don't feel connected to my gender. I've got a dichotomy. Like, well, like, you have a lot of problems then. And basically, people need to stop accepting that and pretending like that's a valid concern, because like, it's not. Man. It means there's something wrong with you.
If you feel wrong in your own body, then
that's the you thing. That's
other than
you
just
problem.
Like you had too much chili or something like that. You're like, oh man, something's going wrong down there.
Or too much bourbon. But, I also was trying to watch.
If there's something wrong with your body that can't be solved, like fundamentally, you feel uncomfortable in your own skin and it can't be solved by taking a huge shit or farting. Then like, I don't know.
A nap, maybe a night, good night's sleep.
Yeah. Then you might have. You might be a crazy person.
I tried to give Violent Night a chance. It came out last Christmas. I don't know if you saw that one.
All right. How did that go?
It was unwatchable. I mean, it's got all that you want. It's the stuff. Right, it's billed as the dad character from Stranger Things as Santa Claus, and it opens up with a funny enough scene where it's like a bad Santa gag. Like, he's in a bar and he like flies away in his reindeer and throws up on somebody. It's got, you know, it's okay, but then. Our main focus is this dude, this cuck, and his ugly-ass nigger wife and mulatto baby, and they're in a massive mansion. It's this gigantic rich family that's connected to the oil industry, and they're all white, except for the one, and, you know, they're all white, and they're totally, they're just evil people. They're horrible. Like, the younger ones are, like, TikTok, like, Zoomers that are doing lingo and posting selfies, and the family's all like corrupt, you know, connected to the government and in the oil industry. And you're supposed to hate all them. Except the sympathetic person you're supposed to care about in the whole thing is the little mulatto girl. And you have like the ugly negress in this massive mansion that if they owned a mansion, it would be the most garish, ugliest fucking hip hop thing you ever saw. But it's like, you're trying to pretend like you're reserved, upstanding, nice white people with taste. It's like, no, you're a fucking monkey. And she's there, like, sternly looking down on these poorly behaved rich white people. And I just, like, I don't need to sit through that. Even though, like, you know, John Leguizamo is, like, the leader of the mercenary group that comes in and tries to, like, I'll deal with John Leguizamo. I'm used to him. You know, he's funny. And
I'm kind of partial to him. Like, I kind of like a lot of his stuff.
I have no problem with him playing, like, a criminal.
Yeah.
But it's like, I have a problem with this ugly-ass fucking sub-Saharan monkey, like, trying to be this, like, I'm supposed to believe you're, like, you're the upstanding mom, that, like, the only person that's sane in this, like, in this nut house filled with evil.
Yeah, he's
people.
Always playing a criminal. He should. That's always what he should Which do. Like, when John Wick, he's the guy that repairs their cars when they get into crashes.
Benny Blanco from the Bronx.
Yeah.
he was in, the only redeeming thing in that terrible Spawn movie, which is actually so bad it's good.
Oh, really? I haven't tried watching that since it came out. But then, what was he? In that movie Collateral Damage, like one of Arnold's relatively newer ones, which is like 20 years old now, he was like the cocaine dealer. He was like, had a cocaine farm someplace.
There you go.
And they were all the beaners were like stomping on the coca leaves and like the acid or whatever, however they start the process. And they were all like strung out, and he was like overseeing them do that.
So this is your Christmas movie. This is your Christmas movie, Mom. That you're supposed to look at that,
dude.
And that's who you're sympathizing with. Everyone else around her is kind of self interested and mean.
You remember when?
And not
remember
nice.
When this shit? Remember when like this was still sort of like a new thing?
Yeah.
Like, this is the thing with Jews. Like, the get woke, go broke thing. It's like, okay, we understand that there's that opinion, right?
Yeah.
But. We have been doing this long enough that we remember when it was still like a relatively new outrage every time they put a black face in front of something. Like, every time they race switch characters, which they've been doing for 10 years now at least. And now what they do is when they have products where there's no known and beloved characters, they just make everybody black. And they make them look like not just black, they make them look like that.
Yeah.
There was a time in America when Gorilla you could have had like you would have had like a Christmas Story play, and then you could have also maybe had like a wholesome Christmas family movie for black people. where it's like a black family, but it's like, you know, some ordinary black looking father, like not ordinary, but you know, like made to appeal to white people, looking like a Cliff Huxtable or a Family Matters type thing. Right. People didn't really object to that.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's just like this. Oh, this is for everyone. And it's like some like lesbian looking African nigger. It's like, that's who you, that's this, but it's like, you know, that's who you're supposed to put yourself, that's your self-insert into the story now.
Right.
It's not like Steve Martin in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles anymore. Mulatto, you would have been fantastic in that role.
Her mulatto daughter is supposed to be like your sentimental like anchor into the story. Like, you're saving Christmas for this little fucking nigglet. And I'm just like, nah, it's like, let John Leguizamo murder her and her whole family for being nigger lovers.
I'm just not going to.
It's like, get him. Like, John Leguizamo is trying to win the race war. On Christmas, Santa Claus is Santa, just get out of there and deliver your presents. It's not your problem.
Yeah.
So we tried that. Not going to happen. It's too bad. So yeah, content.
Anyway.
I don't know. Speaking of content, I guess I'll talk about the other night for just for a second. I mean, hey, thanks for tuning in to today's Daily Show. The first half, anyway, with annoying ads interrupting it throughout. You can get away from this by going to therightstuff.biz/paywall and signing up for a subscription. You will be treated to the full show on a convenient RSS feed in one giant file. You'll never have to hear these sales pitches again, and you'll get to comment and use the Bang forum. What fun! Join us, therightstuff.biz/paywall.
Why, did something happen? Something happened?
No, not at all. But I'll just say, I've been thinking about what to say a lot because I don't want to like really sound like self-serving or anything, and I don't want anyone to like feel bad for me. But
oh man, imagine somebody.
No, nobody feels bad for you. You're not a sympathetic character. It's not how it works.
Well, no, that's not true.
There are people that
really kind of hate you all the time.
No, I've gotten a lot of.
That's what they tell me.
I've gotten like,
no man, people. People here.
No, for, no, hold on.
Like,
there's
people
there's
a, like, support what you. People like will support you, but they're never gonna like you.
Oh, okay. All right. I guess
I mean, no, that's not what I mean. I mean, they're never gonna feel bad for you. You are not somebody who evokes a feeling of like they feel bad for you.
Okay,
they might
good.
Be like,
that's not what I mean. I don't want to start now.
Okay, fine.
That's my point.
Fine.
If but both no. of us got run over by a truck, nobody would feel bad.
I also don't want to alienate like all of the overwhelming support I've received since it happened. Like, there's obviously people that are like, yeah, that was pretty on point.
Yes.
And however, we do have like a long-standing piece of bants that we do to people where they have a shield they use to hide from things that they don't want to hear or things that they don't think is true, where they will scream out, you didn't have to say it like that though. And just because that's a thing doesn't give people license to say it like that. And I shouldn't have said it like that. So I'm sorry I said it like that. I wanted to say a bunch of things that I meant. Instead, I just said a bunch of things that were really mean. And that wasn't very good, especially to Warren.
Yeah.
So I apologize for being so mean and shitty. I don't know. Well, I'm not going to say I don't know where that came from. I didn't.
Yeah. I mean, let's not pretend.
I didn't have a drink and then like make up a bunch of stuff that had never occurred to me before.
That never happens.
No.
No one believes it either.
And I'm not going to pretend.
What happens is when people do something like that and then they blame it on the alcohol, people just let them get away with it because it's easier than continuing to make an issue of it. But I would say, like, that's all I really cared about when I heard about it. Like, the views expressed, I was like, well, that's what he thinks. He's entitled to his opinion. And if you don't agree with it, fine. But some of the sort of nastiness I thought was a little bit over the top. But
I didn't intend to go there. I don't know why.
But I'd also say, in terms of what you said about, like, you don't got to say it like that. Like, I can't tell you how many times people who are legitimately, like, going way too fucking far have tried to pull that out. And so, like, there is actually a limit of being able to say it like that. Typically, that meme is that you're not actually saying it like that. You're just saying the facts.
Yeah.
And someone's like, yeah, we don't have to say it like that. There's literally no other way to say it. But there's a few other people that used to use the "you don't got to say it like that" shield as well, which I'm sure you can imagine who they were. But
I intend in like all sorts of situations to not say it like that anymore. Because let me tell you something, saying it like that is a fun, cheap thrill, and it's a kind of addictive, right? Like being shitty on the internet, like everyone does it, and I don't care if you keep doing it or if any other people keep doing it. I'm not going to do that anymore, like at all. Because it's just like, it's an obsession because it's easy because there's no, There's like no real accountability for it. Like you could say really shitty things on into social media or whatever, into the live stream, and just like get off on the upcomings of doing it in the moment and then recover from it. And I'm just not going to do that anymore because it's actually, I don't know. Now I'm just like babbling and it sounds self-serving, so I'll just stop.
Well, what I want to say to that is one of the things that came out of what you were talking about was the comments, or the, I don't know if you call them comments, whatever, however you want to characterize them. The things you were saying about activism.
Oh.
And I know that this upsets some people who like doing activism. And my point on that, and they're sort of like, what are we going to do with activism? And I'm like, well, look, I'm not telling anybody not to do activism. However, I will say one of the flaws in the NJP and one of the things that was leading to essentially kind of a breakup, not eventually the breakup of it, but was why it was sort of trending downhill is an expectation that was, it was never made clear to anybody that that activism was not like an expectation if you were to join, that it was a voluntary thing that guys that wanted to do could do it. Well, and as a result, people felt like they were pressured to do things that they weren't comfortable doing and that that was what you were supposed to do. And that was never an intent. And yeah, you had something on that?
Not worth mentioning.
Okay, I understand. But so that was kind of the thing. And I think it's important also to, if you're going to do activism, you should do an inventory on it. And like, what have we done? What have we accomplished? And where are we going with this? And for the NJP, being seen as an activist group was detrimental to it. It just objectively was. Like, I can't hide that from you. I can't lie to you about that. Mm-hmm. Among many other problems. Which, you know, I've highlighted before, I've done several shows on it and I've explained it. There's other narratives out there. There is one thing you said. I wanted to say this though. There's one thing you said that was objectively wrong.
I believe it.
I believe that you took total credit because Tony had been out there saying that you were conspiring with people or something like that. You remember that? Like you basically said, yes, it was me. It was my conspiracy. Well, you said
the evil
that
reveal.
Was my conspiracy.
The evil reveal.
You did that, right? Yeah. I understand what you were doing with that, but that's actually not true because he was kind of dining out on that. I wanted to just make it clear. Like, that is not true. Not that it matters what the fuck he says, but like, there are people that never spoke to you that I talked to that told me the same thing.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Because you know how I spent last week.
It was a massive conspiracy of a bunch of people that came to the same conclusion.
Right, but I mean, my point is that I think the way it was framed is that you grabbed guys, pulled them into a chat room, and started like blackpilling them on the NJP. Which I believe that for like a little bit. And I wanted to make sure that that wasn't true. So I interviewed like everybody.
Yeah.
I interviewed like almost everybody, as many people as I could in the course of a week. I mean, I was on the phone all day, every day last week with everyone from the staff and the supporter group leaders and people that had never heard of your little chat, people that aren't personal friends with you, people that don't really talk to you very often or at all told me a variation on the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really just not that well. I mean, I understand why you took credit because that's funny, I guess, but it's just not, and I'm not like,
it's good stuff.
So, it's really not true. It's very, very not true. Like if that was all that it was like you and like three people, I would have just told you to shut up, but that's not what it was. I spoke to like 30 people. And I know that there's a desire on some people's part to not believe this, or on Tony's part to not believe this, or to frame it differently. But no, that's absolutely true. And the other thing I want to say is that the network, the main thing about NJP,
the network survived,
was always the network of people. It was always the pool parties that then became supporter groups and the people in them that all came out of what we're doing here, that all kind of coalesced around us and TRS. And NJP never really made it beyond that. There was an attempt, I won't say it was an attempt. There was an idea to do that, but it never really did. It always just appealed to the same group of people, and then it started shaving those people off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so then it is actually now doing the opposite. So really, this idea that like, and we have evidence of this, because I know you've been getting people contacting you that went away a little while ago. I've had people reaching out to me.
It started.
I'm talking to all the supporter group leaders. Really, they've got people reaching out to them.
It really
so
started.
So when I say that, like, legitimately, the network is actually growing and repairing. There's probably some people that are so butt blasted that they're going to be gone for a while. I don't know, but people thought that was like a cope or a bullshit thing. It's really not. Like when I was saying that the last few days, it's really not. Like more people are contacting me, and not just me, but like you and the supporter group leaders and everybody, and they're all like, we want to come back to whatever the thing is going to be. So
if I could tell another story that I probably told that night, I don't remember where I told. No, I told it on Bang once night too. It's like there were situations where like there was a pool party with like 40, 50 people in it, and the act of converting it into a NJP supporter group turned it into two groups, you know, a 40-member group and a 5-member group. And the people coming back are basically like that group, like doesn't have to be separated from each other anymore, you know?
Right.
And that's that happened all over the country. So it's kind of like when you say people are coming back, it's not like people are coming back to.
Right. I mean,
I don't really know how to describe not, it. Yeah. It's just like the,
you know
the,
what I mean though.
Yeah. The division is like, we're removing the division between these things and going back to something, frankly, that works where it's like, you could be in this giant pool party. And there could be people in there that hate our podcast, don't care about us or whatever, and be fans. It's like, it doesn't matter because you're all in on the struggle.
You know, although you should discourage that.
No, everyone, it doesn't, it's not about me or you or anybody. It's like, it's about the struggle, and it's like basically not coming forward and saying like, all right, you're all going to listen to me now, which was kind of part of the problem. So that's,
well, it was sort of, and again, it's like, you know, you got to understand that that's an affront to some people if you do that, right? Like if you're going to go to them and put these kind of immediate like demands on them, it's like
you planted your flag. Like, all right, I'm going to be the guy that we're going to put do all this under this umbrella, and just like too many people were like, yeah, I don't think so. And you just kind of have to accept it. Like, yeah, all right,
but hold on now. That if we are proper fascists and we just meme being fascist hard enough, we'll get somewhere. You just got to follow my orders.
Yeah, that's it wasn't quite that bad, but like,
that's how you win.
So we're going back. We're going back to something that works.
Thing,
we're just going.
I
was just going to say we're going back to something that we know works, which is having this.
Right.
As
I mean, that's the thing. Is like the number one thing is like you can put an ideological veneer on things. You can make excuses. You can come up with theory crafting on how things work. I mean, I can't tell you how many times in this thing that we have, there are people that are like, this is how things work. Right. Like, and then when they say that, they're like, they convince themselves of it and then they act on that. But it's really just actually what they would like to do. But it's hard. And one of the things I've always encouraged on in all the media that I do is to actually look at the empirical facts. That's what made me stop being a libertarian, when I actually looked at how the economy really works.
Yeah.
The fact is that if you have theories on how things are supposed to work, but when you implement them or you try to implement them, it's not working. At the very least, it's not working for you this time.
Mm-hmm.
So which doesn't mean it can never work. Maybe it's worked like that in the past. I don't know. But right now in America, what we need is to build up our grassroots networks.
Mm-hmm.
Local groups need to have autonomy. It's such a big country. Local leaders need to have autonomy. They need to understand. Am I frozen on your end? Oh, okay.
No, you're good.
It finally froze. Okay. No, it did the same thing on my end, too.
The local leaders need to have autonomy. They don't need to be told that, like, all of you are going to fall under this umbrella. And frankly, many of them just didn't.
Yeah.
That was the other thing. Many of them didn't. Hilariously, some of the guys that enjoy doing activism the most also just didn't obey some of the diktats coming from really from Tony. I guess ultimately he was doing it in my name, so I have to take responsibility for it. But yeah, I mean, he did have a thing where he was trying to make sure, like, you know, the left hand wasn't washing the other one. You know, he wanted to make sure he was occupying the node where, like, all the communication was flowing through, so he could make sure in any situation he knew what he was able to control what the other person knew, which is why he was outraged when I actually started calling every supporter group leader and being like, yo, tell me what's up with you and what you're thinking, what's going on. And then I was like, yeah, no, this project isn't working. We're going to have to, we're going to have to land this plane and try something different and really go back to probably not quite as disorganized as a pool party system, but the same basic thing.
Well, there's a lot. There's a lot that was learned doing this that can be applied. It's not like you have to throw the whole thing out. Like one thing, like I know, like vetting standards and stuff has all.
Yeah, things like that.
A lot of that has been developed.
That's something
like
that all the supporter group leaders are going to work with on their own. Also, the other idea that came out of it is a centralized organization that will be facilitating rather than giving orders.
Yeah.
So, and also the other thing is that there are some projects. So we have, I don't want to detail them because some of them actually are things we don't want to announce that we're doing, not because they're illegal, but because they're just things that people don't need to know that we're doing. But, well, I guess I can say it. There's a guy who wants to train people in how to do local politics, how to understand the local political landscape. And he's going to be doing that. And that means, like, you know, guys that are in groups, supporter groups, pool parties, whatever we're going to call them, can say to their members, hey, who's interested in learning this? Who's interested in being part of this training? Mm-hmm. And this guy has training for you. You can go talk to him. He'll teach you how to do some things, and then he'll give you stuff to do. If you want to do it, you can. And there's guys, because there's already guys that have been doing it, and they've been really enjoying it. So, but it's not for everybody because it involves doing extremely boring things. but some people, but again, so there's that. So, and other things like that, right? So having those kinds of things. So that's the advantage of us all being in communication with each other. So it's not just like, okay, there's a group out in this part of the country. There's a group out of this part of the country. There is a place where they're all coming together and.
Oh my God, I'm back again. Please, you've made it this far into the show and you still haven't shut this version of it off, deleted the file in anger, and gone over to therightstuff.biz/paywall to create a subscription and get rid of this nonsense. Please do so. We'll both be happier for it.
Speaking. And also the role we play is we're going to be doing, and I promised that to them, so we have to do it. More regular calls for vetting for people listening to the show to go out and join and get vetted and join the groups. So if you were thinking, okay, the NJP is over, like I don't have anything to join, I don't have anywhere to go, that's not true. Mm-hmm. That's definitely not true. So this thing is happening still, and in fact, it's actually, for me at least, it's better than it's been in a long time. I'm talking to more people. I'm now in there with all the national level supporter group leaders. And I realized, like, one thing I realized, this is something I want to really say, like, I realized that, like, you know, I was actually just, there was a time I was just friends with these people.
Yeah.
They were just my friends. Mm-hmm. And that's how I want it to be now.
Right.
You know, like, they're just my buddies. And we just hang out. And yeah, like, I'll help them and they can help the group and things like that. But it's like, that structure just wasn't working for us. Now, you can have, we understand fascism, authoritarianism, and all that stuff. That's fine. But objectively, this was not actually achieving the goal. And it was also creating hatreds, divisions, mm-hmm. and making everything like less effective. So because ultimately, if we're going to make some kind of political push in this country, we have to have a hell of a lot more people. That's the main thing. We have to have a hell of a lot more people. I've always said, people always be like, Mike, what's ultimately the plan for taking power? I'm like, having a lot of people.
Yeah, you need mass popularity.
Question mark, question mark, question mark. Literally, yeah. I don't have a better answer.
People are looking for like a direction. That's they're very unhappy with the idea of like, I want to do something, but what is it I'm supposed to do? And unfortunately, that's a hard question to answer.
The best answer that has always been and remains until there's some larger critical mass is achieved is like, talk to people you know, talk to people that trust you and love you and aren't going to realize that you're a Nazi and then go ruin your life. That is still the most tried and true method of how do you turn somebody from semi sympathetic to a believer. It's like you just have to talk to them. There's no magical sticker.
Also,
we are still going to have events.
That's another thing.
Yeah.
We're still going to have events. Everybody wants to still have one big national event every year. Everybody wants to do that.
Yeah,
or like
that should be a
the
thing.
Network, people that are vetted in. Yeah. The supporter group leaders, people that have vetted into the network, we're gonna have a massive gathering. And this time we probably will break 500 or maybe even 1,000 people.
Oh my God.
In terms of numbers.
That's a lot of work.
So you don't have to do it. We have a staff to do it. The staff will do it.
Well, still.
That's what they're there for.
It's a lot of work.
I'll give them direct orders and make them do it.
That is not in the spirit of the discussion we're having right now.
No, I know. I'm joking. That was a joke.
It's a good joke.
No, but that's kind of one of the things that they want to stick around to do is because, like, having one big event a year, like, that's not for several guys. That's like, they can handle it. Yeah, they want to do it too. So they, everybody wants to do it.
Yep.
Everybody wants to do it. Everyone wants to have that one big national event. And I'll give a speech there if people want me to.
We can just do a podcast there like we used to.
Well, I feel like people just don't understand like the actual situation. Like, there's an absolute preponderance of power held by America. What are you going to do? It's a fucking difficult situation. It's hard. It is extremely hard. And frankly, if you just go out.
I'm going to expect Alex to come to the national event, by the way.
Where is it?
I don't know.
We don't even know when
it's
it is.
It's probably going to be not too far from you, the next one. But yeah, we're not sure yet.
It's not going to be too far. But oh, wait, this means no more stuff in Ohio. Thank God. All right.
Yeah, the Ohio.
No more driving to Ohio. Anyway.
Which was a bigger mistake? Ohio or Israel? No, I'm joking. We all know. Yeah, obviously, Israel was a bigger mistake. I don't mean that. That's a joke. But yeah. Anyway,
go ahead. I don't
think that we need to just reflexively try to resurrect doing the same things that have been done time and time again. Obviously that doesn't work. We got to figure out a different path forward.
Well, doing big events for fun is going to
that's fine. Be a thing. Yeah. That's fun.
I mean, that's also the honest truth. The NJP events were like for fun.
They were really fun.
There's nothing wrong with that.
They were.
That they were fun. They were fucking really, great. And that was the best part of the whole thing. We did Mania. Manias were sometimes became a little bit too much. You know, we cleaned them up a little bit with NJP events. So now we can have a happy medium between them. Like, everything we're going to do now is sort of a happy medium between the way it was before and what NJP was doing. I think that's the best way to look at it.
Yep.
And so, yeah, don't think that like there's nothing to do. And like there's something to do. Like, there's a thing that you can get involved with if you want to. And in fact, it's going to be bigger and probably happier. Although, I don't know. But like I said, I've been getting good news from several of the supporter group leaders, and they've all said that basically when they reached out to some of the people that split, they're like, well, you know, yeah, but also whatever. We can just, like, forget all that shit and just, like, try and get over it. Because I'm sure people were mad. I'm sure there's lingering resentments, as there always are. But like
lingering resentment and people that still want to bicker about it. It's like we're moving past it.
Right.
Don't be surprised.
I mean, lingering resentments lead to things like, you know, 6-hour outbursts on the internet. Oof. And we want to avoid that.
Or just like 7-page bang threads that are ready to be deleted just about. Like, I'm just not
right.
Well, I'm gonna go back to like, I don't want to fight with people, but I'm gonna start pruning. Like, if you're one of the, I hate the again with the running the risk of saying it like that again. If you're in the group of this very small group of people who use Bang and use the comments who were really invested in the NJP project, and now you're mad. Like, I'm not interested in fighting with you anymore. But I don't want to see it anymore either. I want the whole thing to move on from that. Like, I get it. I understand why you're mad. It sucks, but...
Yes, I understand why you're mad, but, like, the point here is you shouldn't be mad.
No, they should be mad. They should be mad, but it's like, you know, the point is, like, I'm not going to host the argument over it anymore. It's like, it's over. We're moving past it. We're doing the next thing, and if you don't want to help because you're pissed off, that's fine. Totally understandable position. But you know,
I would just say
other people want to use this, other people, I wouldn't even say that. Other people want to use the site for its actual purpose, which is not to constantly rehash and go over how fucking horrible all of us are for this. It's like, it's fine. You can take that with you. I don't mind, but we're just not going to discuss it anymore after a certain point.
Right. I mean,
we have to move on.
If I were to have tried to cling to the NJP, I would have been like, again, you know, I had this whole thing. I'm not going to read the whole thing.
Oh, I thought you were
But I want everyone to understand this. In the course of... I know you want to move on. But like,
no, I thought you were reading it now. Yeah, but go ahead.
I could read it. I mean, I could read it, but a lot of it is like rehashing stuff. So, But I want to just... Everyone, I'll make this clear. So in case people don't get it. Like, in the course of when I decided that I was basically being sold a bill of goods by Tony, and when a number of people reached out to me and gave me a bunch of red flags about what was going on, and I decided I'm going to talk to as many people as I can over the course of a week. In the course, while that was going on, I kind of like didn't talk in the supporter group leader chat. I didn't really talk to Tony. I didn't talk to him at all. He managed to kick or have quit four supporter groups after having the previous week kicked one.
Move them rather large.
Yes. And so while that, like, and some of them he didn't know about because they had quiet quit. They had essentially quiet quit. They were still, the guy was still lingering around, but he was like, I'm not giving my people in my supporter group over to NJP projects anymore because I don't believe in it and I'm done dealing with Tony.
Yeah.
Okay. This is what, and then those guys told me that because I told them when I called them, tell me everything. And I was like, I'm not mad about any of you. I'm not going to get mad at you. I'm not going to get defensive. Any of that. So, so it was going to be that. It was, so I would eventually have been. And once that happened, what happens to the people that are sticking around? Well, they're going to see that. They're going to get demoralized. So my point is, if I had clung to it, it would have eventually petered out with much worse ultimate consequences. So for those of you that are angry that I made the decision I made, I understand why you're angry. You put a lot of hope into something and you feel let down. I understand. Mm-hmm. But I made the best decision for the overall – forget about the logo. Forget about the name. Forget about the flag. The people, the actual people, I made the best decision for them, for us, and really for you too. So I would suggest that it's not like there's nothing. Like we've been accused, oh, you just guys are all giving up. That's the exact opposite of what this is.
We've given up doing something that doesn't work to go back to doing something that works.
Yes.
It's frustrating. Again, I didn't have to say it that way, but it popped out that way.
that's the thing is cargo culting 1960s activism doesn't work. It doesn't.
Yeah, I said that, didn't I? Said a lot of cool shit. Oh, well. I don't know. How do we get out of this into content now? Because we promised.
Well,
yeah,
we
promised is shows. Merry Christmas.
What I would say is if you just like doing protests for fun, like, I'll tell you something. I'll tell you guys this. That Palestine protest I did in front of the White House in D.C.
looked like fun.
I did that for me.
That's fun. I mean, I've done protests with you.
I'm not saying I'm never going to do that again. I will do that again. If it's something like that, if there's a national issue like that, I'd be totally willing to do
that. Yeah, it's fine.
And I'm also doing it for a couple of reasons. One, I personally, it's not even like for fun. I want to go and yell this shit at these people. I need to express myself about this. And I know there's other guys who feel the same way. Yeah. Additionally, doing stuff like that on that particular issue in the way that we did make an impact on the national narrative. That actually had some kind of effect on the national narrative. So we actually managed to break out into the public consciousness with that protest. Most of the protests the NJP didn't. It's just true. They didn't. But like, you know, that's the thing. We have to be honest about what accomplished what and what does what. But something like that, I'm also like, if it's really just because I want to get it out of my system, then I'll do that. I'll do it for that reason, even if that's the only reason. Because I don't need to worry about being doxxed. I don't need to worry about getting in trouble. And I want to go yell at the fucking Jews in front of the White House. And I'm going to do that kind of shit. So here we are. Anyway, I don't know. What kind of content did you want to talk about?
Well, I've been back on Twitter. And I finally had to break my no politics rule because of this Yemen shit. Because
oh, no.
It's stuff like this. Here's the kinds of stuff that American right wingers are posting around Twitter right now. This kind of shit.
Oh boy, I know
this one is especially
be.
Funny.
Boink says a single. What does it say? Gaggle. What does it say? A single gaggle fuck or gaggle? Was that supposed to be a second G in there?
Wait, what?
A single gaggle fuck of corn-fed Marines can fuck up Yemen in less than 24 hours. And so this is like, is this Yemen?
This is their military shit, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, they've got Jewish flags on the ground and they're marching over. Based.
All right, so
what's happening right now on Twitter is you've got people posting that video. They're posting videos of the F-5s, and they're like, man, America is going to fuck them up. They're going to fuck around and find out.
Well, hasn't
we can take them out with one F-22.
Hasn't America been giving like F-22s to Saudi Arabia, and they haven't fucked them up? Like,
we've been maintaining their air force. We've been maintaining it for them. It wouldn't even fucking function if we didn't maintain it.
Desert Arabs.
Did the volume just drop out? What the fuck?
No, I hear you.
I don't know. Hello?
Oh, okay. All right. Anyway. Okay.
What were you saying?
You got real quiet. Like a limiter.
I was listening.
Airstrikes We did like 130 airstrikes in 2017. Targeted airstrikes in Yemen. We've been doing this the whole time. Their people have been starved and bombed the whole fucking time. It's not like Yemen is some little upstart that just appeared yesterday and decided to screw around with America. We've been fucking with them the whole time.
Right.
And you've got these retarded, dumb fuck Americans on Twitter doing this flabby, overweight bloviation about how our Air Force is going to fuck them up. It's like, you mean like we have been doing? Is that why they're mad? They're probably mad because we've been fucking with them. It's probably why they're mad. I mean, mad too.
So let me ask you this. What kind of, like, what is there a general sort of, have you managed to put like a general, I'm trying to think, is there like a sort of thing that where these kinds of accounts are like a tendency that you can identify them being a part of? Is this like cat turd type people? If, you know, for example, it's just, like,
you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the same shit that we saw after 9/11 about at America's amazing military weapons and you just itch in your soul to see them used against some brown people in the Middle East.
Yeah. Well, yeah, except after 9/11 when the American Empire was much more powerful than it is today. But my question is sort of like, I guess I'm wondering, one, a lot of this shit can be fake. There's that. You never know on Elon Musk's Twitter if this shit is botted or fake. But I expect that the people that say these things are probably older and probably have no fucking clue what is going on.
Well,
they
probably
have no idea what is going on.
They don't know. They have no idea. They do not understand what we've been doing with Yemen. They just don't fucking know.
They also don't understand the actual limitations of our military.
That's what I'm trying to find.
They don't understand, for example.
They
don't understand.
There was a really good effort post that was shared about that specific. Yeah. I think that's what sent Alex off on this tangent, looking.
Hey, you're still listening to only half the show? Get behind the paywall and get the rest of the story. Go to therightstuff.biz/paywall. And choose the subscription model that works best for you. And don't forget, every Tuesday evening, there is an Odyssey stream where Southern Sun will take your donations through a credit card or a debit card in exchange for a subscription. You have no idea how much content you're missing. Go to therightstuff.biz/paywall and let's fix that.
Yeah. For Yemen stuff on Twitter, and I can't find the tweet. It's somewhere in one of God knows how many chats.
They don't understand why it is that the USS Eisenhower, I think that's the one in the Mediterranean Sea, is parked on the other side of Cyprus because they're worried about missiles from Lebanon that could take out their carrier group. They don't understand why I forget what the name of it was, the one that was in the Persian Gulf, was kicked out of the Strait of Hormuz by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard last week. They were literally escorted out of the Strait of Hormuz, and they were told by the Iranians, don't display weapons. Like, they were basically told, like, you're going to be leaving the Strait of Hormuz. Don't do anything aggressive and leave. And they left. They also don't understand how much it costs to keep these carrier groups out there in operation in the field that far from America, that we have 11 carrier groups and we can't keep all of them moving at the same time. We can only keep about half of them active at the same time. Then they have to come back and like refit, refuel, or like rest, whatever the fuck they have to do, and they have to send another one out. And how much time and effort and money that costs to maintain this, and we cannot maintain it forever. They also don't understand these countries have air defenses. They also don't understand that Iran has now made a significant military alliance with Russia. None of this shit do they get, that this is not a gimme. This is not like Iraq, 2003. The Middle East is not a gimme. And the Yemenis, yes, the Yemeni government, the Houthi government, which controls, you know, doesn't control all of Yemen. Borzan and I talked about this last night. We showed the map. There's a map you can see of who controls what territory in Yemen. The Houthi government doesn't control all the territory, but they control all the populated territory. So the part controlled by like the Saudi proxy regime is just desert. It's all desert. So all the populated cities, the capital city, the major port city on the Red Sea, that's all controlled by the Houthis. So they effectively control the country. If it were not for the Saudis militarily occupying part of the country and being supported and armed by America.
Oh, the Saudis just occupy some desert. Houthi, what we call
that's
Houthis.
What I said.
That's not. It's like there is a term for their actual government. We've been calling them Houthis all the time.
Well, they call like in the West they say the rebels. They call them rebels.
All right, I found it.
They've held at least 60% of the country the entire time. They're not rebels. They're not rebels.
They were rebels, but they took over the country. So now they're the government. Deal with it. Like, It's like Ansarullah or something like that.
Propping up Saudi Arabia over there has not been successful at all.
No. So I found
it's
this
just another case. Yeah, go ahead.
So Ansarullah is the.
I found this effort post on Twitter I was looking for that I think started Alex's train of thought. It's from someone named Map Human Intent Huntsman.
Wait, what?
What? Map Human?
Topographical evidence of Map Human Intent?
I guess so. He's going to map human intent. He's going to
build
map
Human Intent chat?
It's like human intent cartography.
Okay.
So he says, long post on the missile attack, math in the Red Sea. USS Kearney has currently engaged 22, if I'm not keeping perfect score, aerial attack platforms launched by Houthi rebels on maritime assets for the Kearney itself in the immediate vicinity of Yemen and the Bab el-Mandeb checkpoint. Choke point, sorry. Kearney's magazines hold Kearney's magazines hold 90 missiles of various flavors and must be replenished in port. There are currently 8 guided missile cruisers and destroyers attached to the Ford and Eisenhower carrier strike groups operating in the Med and Red Sea. Call it roughly 800 missiles in the collective magazines of these vessels, split between various flavors, including land attack platforms not suitable for ship defense. Each ship also has much shorter range point defense platforms. The primary missile is the SM-2 and the SM-6. Raytheon had mothballed SM-2 missile production until 2017.
Whoa, deadnaming Raytheon. It's RTX now. Don't deadname them.
Oh, it's like, what does the TX stand for? It's like Raytheon.
They're ripping off fucking NVIDIA Corporation. Like, I don't understand how they're getting away with this. I would sue the shit out of these people.
I think it was like Sam Bankman-Fried. Like, it's Raytheon, but it's also like a crypto fucking pyramid scheme. So they reactivated SM-2 missile production in late 2017, reactivating it for a large foreign sales contract. These are the older, shorter range interceptors likely being used by the Kearney to shoot down Houthi's cheap attack drones. Production of SM-2s is extremely slow, less than 50 per year, with deliveries split amongst numerous allies. SM-6s have replaced SM-2s as a future fielded interceptor system with Raytheon RTX, delivering numbers. Navy's goal is to double that number by 2028, scaling to a production rate of 300 per year. Currently, it's 150 to 200. But RTX is nowhere near close to that run rate. Each SM-6 presently costs about $5 million per unit, with a new multi-year procurement request that cuts the cost unit in half. So
RTX had cuts production due to lack of international sales.
Mm. Huh. How many frames per second, though?
It's almost like there's an incentive for them to stir up conflicts. All right.
I mean, they're up to like, they're doing like 240 frames per second even these days, aren't they?
Like, conflict happened and they weren't ready for.
You get a 3070, forget about it. That motion is so smooth. All right, I'll stop with that joke. Sorry. That was shitty. The audience is going to like it.
Oh, and it's restarted due to increasing global demand. Interesting.
It's like Raytheon. How many like billions of Defense Department dollars can you go through per second?
Yeah,
it's like more than like the RTX 3070 can do, like frames per second. Like, anyway, yeah. So
where was the point here? Hang on. Defense intelligence reported in October that Department of Defense current unclassed estimate is that the PLA Rocket Force has at minimum 850 intermediate and long range anti-ship missiles fully operational that we know of. The two carrier groups currently operating in the Pacific have about the same number of fleet defense interceptors available as those in the Middle East. 800 max versus 850. Basically, Westpac has little inventory to spare. So they're saying it's like, yeah, they don't build enough to keep up with like this new, like if the Houthis are going to keep attacking. And that's basically why the carrier groups are like slinking off quietly.
Yeah.
So,
the thing is, it
sounds like those. So you're saying that there's point defense systems. There's probably systems that are more adept at defending the carrier group itself, mm-hmm. and then the systems you would need to extend that coverage further out and cover things like cargo ships is not going to be something
you
that's
can't air defense. You can't do air defense on sea the way you can on land.
Yeah,
you just can't. They
probably can't cover all of that traffic, that sea traffic, and they have a small arsenal of those things, so they're gonna conserve those.
Right, frankly, the biggest problem is here's what the Iranians did, and the claims that like Iran is backing Yemen is just that really can't be refuted. It obviously is.
What about Oman?
And was that?
What about Oman? We got Yemen.
Oman is kind of. I'm not sure. I need to think a little bit more. I think Oman is part of like the Arab League and probably part of OPEC and stuff. I don't know, but they don't really. They're not as active in Yemen. Is much more like get involved and stuff. But
I wasn't expecting an actual.
Oman also doesn't have a port on the Red Sea.
Anyway,
they do have a port on the Gulf.
But, that was supposed to be a short aside.
No, I know. But I mean, you would think that they would be. You. That's a good question though. Like, what is their posture on this, right? But I think that's like one of the poorest countries in that region, which is actually then pretty poor.
It's the Oman-Yemen alliance.
The thing is about what the Iranians did is what they did, and this was sort of, and then they did this as a result of understanding that they had been targeted by America in various ways for decades. Is they did start to develop their network of militias and groups in other countries that are projecting their power out to Lebanon and to into Iraq. They've got Hezbollah in Iraq now, and the Iraqi government doesn't really have any central control and is sort of batted around between the various groups that are occupying different parts of the country. They've extended their power out to Syria and in Yemen, and what they've done is they have a huge amount of effectively what you could just say are like conventional short-range missiles or even some long-range missiles. They have very effective defense of their neighborhood, very deep and effective defense of their neighborhood, whereas America has to, in order to fight over there, has to project power.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have carrier groups out there. And ultimately, carrier groups were extremely powerful weapons in a previous era when a second tier power like Iran didn't have the kind of arsenal that it has. And when it's like, okay, they basically have no defenses against us, but Iran does have defenses. They have air defenses because ultimately that's the hub of where all this is going to come from. So making war on Yemen, it's like, okay, but that's just a proxy ultimately of the Iranians. The Iranians are the major target, and the Iranians have missile technology, drone technology. They got air defenses. They're probably going to get air defenses from Russia. Russia has the best air defense systems in the world. Like, it's just not, this is not feasible. And already we've seen the limits of NATO power projection in Ukraine, you know, without getting directly involved militarily
that's
on
NATO.
The ground.
That's not the United States. That's a different entity.
Is that a joke? Are you serious?
No, it's not a joke. We have America and our military system, and then there's NATO.
Yes, true. I mean, America has its resources that are not all made available to NATO, but it's mm-hmm. similar kinds of systems is my point. But the aircraft carriers and all that stuff, yeah, that all is going to come into play to defend Israel. But the fact is the power projection is not – they're simply the counters that the Iranians have developed for American power projection over the last couple of decades are serious and will cause damage to our. It's like the Iranians can't project power to America, but our ability to project power in the Middle East is seriously.
Well, what I think it is it creates a calculation where, well, we don't want to go in there willy nilly. There's scenarios where we might, but we don't want to be forced into those situations. Like, if we're going to initiate any kind of action over there, we want to be the ones who figured out what we're going to do. And Israel has got us with our pants down right now by fucking around with Gaza.
Well, Hamas got everybody with their pants down.
Yeah.
Hamas, to some extent, I think, actually got the Iranians with their pants down, frankly, too. I don't think the Iranians fully expected it, which is also why...
Hezbollah
also, I don't think, totally expected it, which is why they have been playing patty cake with the Israelis, although they've scored some hits. you know, the other question is, are they going to, because they kind of punted on their first red line, which was like their first red line was Jewish troops in Gaza. Well, that happened. Their second red line now is like Hamas defeat. Like, if Hamas is going to be defeated, then we'll jump in. And the Yemenis, you know, they started by initially they were just firing missiles, long-range missiles at Israel. When those, of course, were getting picked off by air defenses. Like, there was no way they were going to get through. That would have been funny if they did, but they didn't. And the Jews were saying, like, well, we're now going to go bomb Yemen. And they didn't. That's interesting, right?
Hmm.
That's kind of interesting. You think a country lobs a fucking missile at Israel and they're going to go fucking ham, right? But they didn't. They didn't do that. What they did do and what they're still doing is they bomb Syria occasionally. And what they really do is they blow up Syrian airports. And the reason they do that is because they understand the resupply routes from Iran to Hezbollah go through Syria, and they want to blow up as many transport routes as they can through that country so that Hezbollah can't get resupplied from the Iranians. It's not going to be successful. They're just going to figure out how to do it. Like, you're not going to be able to stop it. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's silly. That's also why they wanted to just do a revolution in Syria, to break that up, to break up that corridor, and also just to take another belligerent to Israel and plunge it into civil war. So it's like, the thing is, America and their proxies in Israel can still cause a big mess in the Middle East. And there kind of is this elaborate game of chicken, but we're no longer in the place where you can say America is going to definitely provoke these Arabs into do something stupid, use that as an excuse, and start an all-out war. That does not seem to be the plan, and it does not seem to be – they seem to be trying to avoid that. So this idea, we already all fuck up Yemen. There's not even any indication – what they're saying is we're going to defend shipping in the Red Sea. And they have some kind of boats out there doing that. And the UK added like one boat. It was like a big announcement. I said, UK adds boat to boat crew to defend shipping. But all these fucking shipping companies, and there's dozens of them now, are saying, like, we're just not going that way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, do I really want to, like, risk my insurance rates by shipping in that region?
The insurance rates already doubled for all those ships, and probably more so than that, and they're just not going to do it.
Yeah. Dude, the thing is, last night, they can go around. It's going to take
They have to.
I think it adds like a month round trip to your shipping.
Yeah, go all the way around Africa. But it's still
cheaper than losing a ship.
The whole point of the Suez Canal is trying to get around Africa for
its entire existence. Am I right?
Everyone's trying to just get around Africa. Finding a route where you don't have to. But no, the whole point of the whole Suez Canal, and we talked, Boris and I had a long talk about all this stuff last night. We go all the way back to the 50s with the Suez crisis and the revolution in 1954 to overthrow Mossadegh in Iran and everything. And all that shit, like the Suez Canal is huge because that's how Europe connects to Asia.
Hey, you're still listening to only half the content? I don't know if I could do that. And I would say to myself, man, this Svenpai guy is making good content. I love this. I can't take any more free riding. I don't know what I'm going to do. What am I going to do? I'm Svenpai's top guy. What am I going to do? Seven Sun chose me to get a subscription. Whoa, Sven needs me? Okay, I'll do it. I'm going to bat for you, Sven. I'm going to therightstuff.biz/paywall, Sven.
Yeah, shipping wise. And otherwise, you got to go literally all the fucking way around Africa. I mean, think about how huge the Suez Canal was for Britain when they were running India and still to some extent have, you know, lots of interest there. So, like, if you want to go from, and Israel does a lot of trade with India, that's all got to go through the Red Sea. You can't, you know, now. So this is a big problem. And dude, the number of I read that last night on the show with Borzoi, the number of shipping companies that are no longer going to be using the route through the Red Sea. They're going to be going around. Yeah, Maersk is massive. That's a huge fucking shipping company. And a bunch of other ones too.
That's
smaller
the one
ones you haven't heard of.
That's the big one. You're big enough you've heard of it. Like, I've seen Maersk.
Because you see it. Yeah. Because you see it on the side of containers everywhere, mm-hmm. right? When you're mm-hmm. driving around, you see. I believe it's a Dutch company. I believe Maersk is probably run by Jews, but I think it's located
Dutch
in
Dutch Jews. What's the difference, right?
Ooh, Deutsch. There's actually people that will take that argument up. They'll be like, I agree with that.
Just have a chuckle. Because I don't think that's. Well.
Yeah. Anyway.
Of course, though.
What's that?
Nothing. I had Twitter open and my nigga Jim Cornette is
the larger context that the I guess
oh
goes
I'm wrong
saying.
It's Danish. I always get those two fucking countries mixed up.
Aren't they the same country?
It's the same basic thing. They're just a tiny little country in Europe,
like the Danish with, like, the Dutch
with blonde people in it. there's now gonna actually be people.
They have all kinds of like dams and there's too much water. They, you know.
Dude, Danish people are legitimately gonna get angry at this. We are not Dutch.
I know. We know.
Dutch are the corniest people in Europe.
We're just dumb Americans. We don't know, and it's a whole gag to pretend you don't know. It's fine.
Yo, but I legitimately thought Maersk was a Dutch company because, like, it Dutch is like a massive. It was like that was what they were known for was shipping. Merchants. That was like their bit. Mm. I guess Daneland is the same thing, right? Isn't that what they call it, Daneland?
I don't know what they call those little irrelevant countries over there.
Oh, see that? That's just like, come on.
I'm sorry. It's like smaller than the fucking county where I live. America. America's huge.
Yeah, I'm just used to the country I live in being massive. Yeah, I can't really conceive of what it would be like to live in a tiny little country of 5 million people and half of them being like violent refugees.
Yeah, exactly. Violent refugees. Like the other interesting thing about this Yemen situation is like what Yemen is actually doing is humanitarian. They are trying to shut down shipping to a country that's prosecuting an ethnic cleansing campaign.
Yes, they are.
While
yes, exactly right.
America props it up.
What Yemen is doing is a humanitarian intervention. It's really from their perspective, as a small, poor country that has been involved in a war, that they fought a war for independence, and they still have a foreign power occupying part of their soil. They're still in the sights of the massive evil empire. They are nonetheless bringing heat on themselves by taking actions to damage the economic power of a country that is engaged in an act of genocide.
Yeah, it's incredibly risky what they're doing.
It's very risky for them, and it's risky because the government. It's stable in most of the country, but, you know, there is a force occupying part of the country trying to unseat them, and they need to maintain that seat of power in the part of the country that they have and also maintain popular support because there's a thing that America likes to do, which is they're like, oh, if you're going to go against us, we're going to make your people suffer until they see the only option being dislodging your government. That's what the Jews do to the Palestinians. That's what the Jews did to the Lebanese, and that's what the Jews that run America try to do to all these other countries. That's what we've been trying to do to Iran for 50-some-odd years now, is basically be like, hey, if you want to have this Islamic State, like, you're just going to starve and die until you don't have it anymore. And that's how we do. So, yeah, it's all very risky, and you got to give them credit. And that – did you ever see the video of when they actually hijacked that Israeli shipping, that container ship? That Jewish container ship?
Tom Hanks movie?
It was fucking based.
I have not
seen it. It was fucking
that.
Cool. No, it was actually really cool. They had a helicopter, and they were, like, flying up on the ship, and they land on the boat, and they all have, like, their guns out, and they all have, like, they're all, like, masked up, and they have, like, the green headbands with, like, the Palestine flag and the Yemen flag on them. And then they go, into the into the bridge, I guess, where the crew is. And of course, this is a shipping container that is like on the ocean for like months or weeks at a time. So these guys are all there in like sweats and shit. They're like sweats and basketball shorts, like sitting around in the bridge of the ship, just like, it's probably on autopilot too. They're just there like bullshitting. And then these commandos, these like armed fucking commandos come in and hijack their ship. And they're just like, all right, all right. And then they had drone footage of the ship, like, after they'd taken it over, they hoisted the Palestine flag over the ship, and they had like a bunch of speedboats going alongside it as they were taking it into port in Yemen. And then what they did was they showed a clip of the crew, because the crew of the ship wasn't Jewish, right? The crews of these ships are all they're basically like journeyman contract workers from all over the place, right? So there are a lot of Arabs, some Africans. And they showed them like at the place where they were holding them in Yemen, and they were in this room. This one guy's playing like this ukulele, Middle Eastern instrument, and singing. And they have big wads in their cheek of this plant they chew. That's basically, it's called like kwat or quat. I don't know. It's called like quat. They chew it in the Middle East. It's illegal in most countries, but it's one of the major cash crops of Yemen, and it's kind of like how Bolivians chew coca.
Wait, why is it
illegal?
Gives
you like
is it like basically drugs?
Yeah, it's drugs. It basically,
skull, and it got banned because people kept spitting it into their like little bottles.
No, I don't think it makes you high. What they say is it gives you like a light buzz and makes you really talkative, so it's popular at parties. They say gentlemen in Yemen, it's a tradition. They make tea and they chew kvat and they sit and they talk and have conversation for hours.
We should give some of that to Mike. I mean, he doesn't say enough. It'd be good to wake him up.
No, that's actually been my secret all along.
I can definitely use some.
Except I boof it. I don't have. That's why, because I can't have a wad in my mouth while we're doing the show. So I'm just like, no, that's actually a terrible joke.
We can't be boofing quat. No boofing quat,
dude.
What?
Now I have to look up how to actually spell that.
Don't. Anyway, the point was that they were making gags on some of the Arab channels on Telegram that I follow, where they were like, hey, maybe more of these shipping container crews are going to hope they get hijacked so they can take a little vacation and like hang out and just like chill.
That's
they were
good, right?
They were all just like chilling. Because what do they care? They're like, I'm just getting paid. I'm not dying.
Yeah, this isn't my stuff.
Fucking
this isn't my boat.
Like, it's not my crap. Go ahead, take it. Yeah.
We're an unarmed vessel here.
Yeah.
I wonder what,
so
yeah. What
that's the one. I don't know if they hijacked any others. I think that they fired at some others and basically made them like reroute or reroute or whatever. Because the other thing is there's that little strait right at the sort of the bottom of the Red Sea, right?
Yeah.
Between Yemen and Djibouti. And that at that point is when they would be most vulnerable to getting, because
is
it's
that
like,
Hormuz
only a very,
or is that the other one?
No, that's in the Persian Gulf. That the other strait.
Right,
this
right.
One's called like it's got a weird name. We talked about it on the show before.
Yeah.
It's like Mandab al something.
Oh yeah, the Mandab one. Yeah. It's
I think it means like Gate of Tears or something like that in Arabic.
Well, it's off kind of
Bab al Mandab or something like that.
Is it China's only Middle Eastern outpost over there in Djibouti?
Could be.
Probably. Yeah, Bab al Mandab Strait. It's between Yemen and Djibouti, and that's where they
Djibouti.
what can you do? It happens.
These things happen.
Oh,
know,
man.
Other languages and shit. No, it's not near Oman. It's near Yemen.
It's near Yemen.
That Djibouti got me like, oh, man.
Yeah.
It can be. Sometimes it be like that.
Yeah, it's not.
What country is that?
Yeah, it's not. That's America.
No, sometimes it'd be like that. Where is that located? Is that over there by like Yemen or something?
Africa, Mexico, and other places I don't give a crap about.
Yeah. Carl's got it.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, that's the Bab el Mandab. But if you there's some satellite pictures of it. Yeah, it's really not that big. You could easily grab, you could easily do that.
Not
but yeah, Mantar. So I don't know what they're gonna do. I mean, they're protecting shipping in the area, but I'm like, okay, but are these companies going to send their ships through the Red Sea anyway? Have they decided that are they happy with America's protection? This is sort of a question I want to know.
You know what my favorite part about all of this is, like America's name for this operation?
Yeah, it's like Burning Spear or something like that. Or
No. Let me look it up again. It's
Burning
about
Spear Chucker.
Prosperity Guardian, right?
Oh yeah, there you go.
Really Operation
gay.
Prosperity Guardian. Yes.
Prosperity Jardia.
You should call it like Operation Prosperity Gospel. Like Joel Osteen is like the general in charge of the ship. He's like, if you worship Jesus, you'll make a lot of money. It'll be great.
Because I was saying,
just have a positive attitude.
They were bloviating about America's various military campaigns, and they had Operation Prosperity Guardian listed in there. I'm like, bro, you know that's kind of cringe, right? Prosperity
Dude, all
Guardian.
All the names we have are cringe.
Operation like prosthetic.
We haven't had like a cool name for an operation, a military operation, like a long time. America's always cringe.
Frosty.
It's like the cringiest country. It really is.
Desert Shield.
It's like actually a very cringe place.
And now it's Desert Sword. Now it's Desert Storm.
That's like the Desert Shield.
I think Desert
Storm were the
cool.
last cool things.
Desert Storm.
Operation Iraqi Freedom. That was fucking cringe.
That's newspeak
very
shit.
Bad.
It's like, oh, we're gonna free them from this regime that we don't like.
Yeah, that
like.
Was when. No, that's because they had to start like lying to you all the time, and that's why the military operations
just,
have gay names.
We should just call this like Operation Alternative Shipping Lanes, like Operation Revisit the Cape, because why not?
Yeah.
Operation
literally
logistical
operation,
restructuring.
Call Operation Cape Town because that's what they're going to be doing anyway.
Yeah, right.
Like, just be going around the horn. Operation around the horn.
Of an operation like
that's
Magellan.
How you're
going
to have to go. You're not going.
Operation go around
the
longest way.
And so we've got this
Operation
this Security
Ground.
Council vote coming up.
Operation Sphericock. What?
I was going to say Operation Scenic Route. That's good too, though. Like, well,
Operation
go
Sequest?
Operation Sphericock, because you have to go around the whole world rather than just going right through this one little strait.
Yeah. Or just do the bit where like American names like they mean the opposite of this is like Operation Shortcut. It's actually like go all the way over here. Desert Shortcut.
Yeah.
Ah, shit.
Well, I mean, Iraqi freedom is accurate. We did free them from the confines of their bodily prisons.
Yeah.
Yeah, we freed them from their own. That was a gag going on back sovereignty. Then. I guess we freed all of the Saddam's like political prisoners so they could go do ISIS. I mean, is that an accurate chain of events? Do I have that right, or was it Iran that had more of the political prisoners? Which is just like, yeah, they locked the bad ones up.
I don't, the more you look into the history of America in the Middle East, the more complicated and fucked up and retarded it all becomes.
You can make sense of it just by understanding all of it's just gun guarding Israel.
Yeah.
It's just be called Operation Gun Guard.
Have we ever talked about the USS Stark?
What was that again? I might know about.
Does
this,
it get beheaded?
USS Stark.
Things are getting kind of stark here. I mean,
everybody knows about the USS Liberty, nobody ever talks about the USS Stark.
So he's from Game of Stark is from Game of Drones, right?
Yes. Here is the link to it. It's a very interesting little incident. It happened during the Iran-Iraq War. You remember?
Oh, yeah, I know.
In the ISIS.
You remember back when we used to help Iraq, and we took Iraq off of this list of countries that sponsor terrorism so we could make sure they got war material? You remember that?
I mean, I don't remember it. I know it happened. I was a little
kid. Right. No, I mean, we were young at the time.
Yeah.
We were kids. Yeah, so here's the USS Stark. It's a ship. Oh, man. It's listening.
Yeah, there's actually, like, it looks like that ship is in distress right there. Yeah, that's...
Yeah. Oh, no, what happened? It got hit by missiles from an Iraqi aircraft.
Okay.
The side that we were defending, the Iraqis, they blasted this thing with missiles.
Just, like, for fun?
They said it was an accident. And the United States gunt guarded for them. Even though it killed a bunch of our sailors, we gunt guarded for them, and we ended up blaming Iran for it. It's basically, Iran had created a tension in the region, you know? So it's really Iran's fault that Iraq shot us.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then we just doubled down on our support. Hilariously, I didn't know this until I was reading the article on it. It looks like the pilot, ironically enough, defected to Iran afterwards.
Okay, based. So maybe that was shot. I mean, maybe it was just an Iranian strike. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean,
I think it came sometime later, much later. But yeah, it's just.
Oh, okay. So I'd say that could be a very successful gay op by the Iranians.
Obvious, yeah, but I think it happened far enough afterwards that it was like, okay, it probably wasn't like he intentionally did that to try to fuck with Iran. I mean, with Iraqi American relations, and not that it would have worked, because what did America do? They just doubled down on supporting Iraq, as usual. Whatever pissant country we're supporting, we'll let them shoot us a few times.
Hmm.
If you're hearing this, then you're only getting half the show. Did you know that therightstuff.biz is 100% listener-funded? Thanks to this censorship machine, this project can only be sustained by listeners like you, by supporters like you. So why don't you get behind the paywall at therightstuff.biz/paywall and show the powers that be that they can't silence the most silenced?
Yeah. Not a lot of people know about this.
And the reason is because Iraq was fighting the Iranians on behalf of Israel.
And
so effectively, it was like Israel. And then did they bring this back up when they wanted to go after Saddam later on?
I think we got some sort of settlement. Yeah, the Iraqi government established a fund of $400 million.
In
2011.
And that was in June of 2011.
In 2011, the Americans are like to the Iraqis, you owe us money
for that ship back.
They're like, you owe us. I mean, that to me is like. If I were Iraq, I would be like, first of all, it's like the government has changed hands like so many fucking times since that happened that like we can't possibly be held responsible for that.
This is what your purple fingers are for?
Fuck you. You owe us money. Get the fuck out of here. Like, what are you talking about?
We're still washing the purple off our fingers.
That's the kind of
shit
that's just like the level of chutzpah there is just like insane.
Mayport,
Washington used the incident to pressure Iran, which it later blamed for the whole situation. President Ronald Reagan said, "We've never considered Iraqi's military hostile at all. The villain in the piece is Iran." I mean, it's just amazing, right? Iraq fucking hits your ship with missiles, and then you start pointing your finger at Iran.
Yeah.
But they've kind of memory-holed that whole thing. Like, what were you doing there in the 80s? Oh, nothing.
Oh my god, dude! I have some other names of U.S. military ops in the Middle East that are extremely gay. But yeah,
well, they had a name for this operation. I forget what it is when they were helping Iraq.
Yeah, they don't have everything. Okay, so we got
U.S. officials claim the Iraqi jet's pilot was not acting under orders from his government and that he was later executed. But an Iraqi Air Force officer later stated the pilot was not punished and he was still alive. According to Jean-Louis Bernard, author of Heroes of Baghdad, the pilot Abdul Rahman would have received the Medal of Bravery at the end of the Joint Iraqi-U.S. Commission of Inquiry. His subsequent defection to Iran is not mentioned in the book.
Everything we do over there is just an embarrassment, or worse. Worse.
So between 1991 and 1995, the name of the U.S. military operation in Iraq, which was supposed to protect the Kurds from Saddam, was called Operation Provide Comfort.
Provide Comfort.
It's really gay. But it's also just like, it's just a lie. It's like, Operation, it's like the American military ops get more gay in name, like the more evil they are. Like if you're, cause here's the thing, when you're doing something that is like a legit, this thing about it, this makes sense. If you're doing like a legit military op, that's like in defense of your country and your nation and your interests, you can give it a cool ass fucking name. Like the Yemenis did an op called Operation Blow to the Head. And I'm like, okay, that's fucking cool. Right, because they don't have to be shy about it because they're actually defending themselves, right? So, like, if you're gonna, but America's like Operation Provide Comfort. It's like no, because what you're actually doing is some evil shit.
Yeah.
Operation. The more like gay and soft pedaled the name of it is, the more it's like, well, you're lying. What you're doing is like is brutal imperialism, and really, you should call this Operation Operation Buttgoy. You know.
Looking a little deeper into that conflict, because I don't know a whole lot about that first war. Iraq started it. We helped Iraq. Iraq was using chemical weapons on Iran.
I'm sure we made Iraq start it. I'm sure like we connived to get that outcome.
Maybe. Who knows?
I would be amazed if it weren't the case. But yeah.
I mean, we were – so yet again, we're supporting a power that's using weapons of mass destruction, chemical weapons, on an enemy that they provoked, that they attacked. And we're supporting them. Huh.
And remember what – remember the talking point in 2003? I distinctly remember it from the pro-war bloviators who are now bloviating about blowing up Yemen that Iraq – we know Iraq uses chemical weapons. They use them on Iran.
I remember
and then
that.
The Libtard comeback was like, yeah, when we were arming and funding them. And they were like, well, so what? we have to go now get rid of him.
I remember was it that guy Ritter, like we know that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction because we have the receipts.
No, that's was an that old well, routine. That's an old comedy routine. That's from what's his nuts, or maybe that's where he got it from.
Well, Scott Ritter never said that because Scott Ritter was actually he would point out the fact that the point at which Iraq had chemical weapons and was using them was when they were acting as a proxy for America, and that now the question of did we provide those or not, that is actually something I was like, I'm not sure if that's true. Maybe they manufactured them themselves, but whatever. The point is that we were providing Iraq with lots of military aid, and we were supporting them in that war. So
the thing is, we also vacillated between Iran and Iraq in the early 80s. We did give Iran weapons in an effort to get some American hostages freed. Right. We kind of like
that's
both sides.
We weren't really playing both sides. That was an effort to get that was really, like Iran-Contra, right? That was an effort to get the hostages without having like some kind of debacle. Without appearing to give them something.
The entire like American posture essentially for I guess the last 40 fucking years in the Middle East has been the chief villain, like evil.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it all comes back to Israel. You know, most of those Iranian hostages were Jews. The people that the Iranians took hostage were mostly Jews. And
they're like
and
State
the,
Department
yes.
people, right? Pretty much.
Yeah. There were people in the embassy and shit. And bureaucrat. Yeah. And so I mean, you're talking about Iran-Contra when you're talking about how we gave them weapons, right? Yeah, that was like highly illegal too.
It's just it's amazing to see that posture and then watch America talk about democracy and threats to democracy, and it's like, you mean you? You're the biggest threat to democracy around the world. It's you.
Yeah.
You.
I don't think there's really anybody that doesn't get that like follows this shit, right? Like nobody. Well, Americans aren't following it. I'm saying people that understand and follow foreign policy. I don't think that there's any of them.
That's what just blows my fucking non-existent hair back is whenever you see someone just casually discussing something happening in the Middle East, and you're like, "Are you just not reading anything? Did you not?
No,
just
they don't know anything. They don't
Google
know anything.
Search to look. Like you have no idea what's actually been going on over there
they have no
for
idea.
40 years."
Also, that's just bloviation, like a what did they say, like a fuck gaggle or a cluster butt of Marines can take out Yemen or something?
Butt gaggle.
What word they use?
what
did they say? What word did they use?
I think it was gaggle fuck, I believe.
A gaggle fuck. That's not a real thing, but that's fine. A gaggle fuck of Marines could take out Yemen. No, they couldn't.
But there's this one. Like, this is just a typical.
We're also not going to be landing Marines in Yemen.
Yeah, why would we do that?
We wouldn't do it because they would get killed.
Yemen tells America to bring it on, and then America, and it's just like an F-22 Raptor flying around. Like,
I mean, America, if we decided to make war on Yemen, could like win, but like,
wow, look at that F-22, man, that thing is awesome.
I've seen some stuff with like A-10s and other shit being posted. Like, yeah, bring it on, Yemen. Like you've been bringing it to them for years now, so I don't know where you're coming at this from.
Another point is that, like, some of these regimes are a little bit, these governments or these militias and stuff in the Middle East are a little bit deterred by America, but at some point they're willing to take punishment because they've just been getting it anyway, and
that's what's so fucked up. It's like the implication is Yemen's never faced punishment from America, and I'm like, wrong. Been getting punishment the whole time.
Right.
It actually makes what they're doing seem even more brave than you would think. Like, Yemen knows better than anybody what it's like to have to deal with America. I mean, I guess if you just live in the Middle East, you understand the dynamic.
Well, most people in the Middle East understand that, like, and the thing is, it's like, you know, it's a funny thing because it's like the Middle East was not, you know, there's always this reputation in the minds of Americans, particularly in the second half of the 20th century up till now, of the Middle East is this hotspot of like constant war and civil war. And really it's only because the ultimate reason is because of the state of Israel. Now, what people blame it on, what people that don't want to talk about the Jew question blame it on is World War I, the fall of the Ottoman Empire, and the subsequent carving up of the Middle East into states where the borders don't really make any sense. And
they drew funny lines all over their region. Hadur her. Now they fight all the time.
I actually believe, because again, legitimately, I make all of this stuff about Jews. Like, if this, I do. And people can
There's no reason not to. I mean, why else would you meddle in such an area?
In my understanding, because we see how Jews use populations and population demographics as a weapon. We understand that Jews use populations as a weapon. They use blacks as a weapon against whites, and they use Sunni as a weapon against Shia, and Shia as a weapon against Sunni. They use demographic and population groups as proxies for their own interests. And I think one of the things that happened is the way they carved up the Middle East in the Sykes-Picot Agreement was on purpose. I think that they did it on purpose. Now, you could say they did it on purpose for the state of Israel or for the sake of European imperialism, but they on purpose wanted the countries to be. Now, some of it had to do with previous colonial claims, but I think ultimately they on purpose wanted the countries to be fundamentally unstable and divided. That's what they wanted to be.
Hmm.
That's the thing is, like, Israel and America, their primary system of operation seems to just be constant fucking gayops.
Instability is actually America's goal.
Chaos merchants.
It is not stability.
It's pure chaos merchants. But yeah, it's like, I mean, even with like Hamas, like Israel supporting Hamas because they were positioning them against the Palestinian Authority, like just constant gayops.
Big mistake, by the way.
Big mistake.
Every time Israel and America like unseated a secular like a kind of a secular leftist Arab institute, yeah, government or whatever, and replace it with like a Islamic one, they have regretted it. With the exception of, I guess, ISIS. ISIS was like a real, because everybody united to destroy ISIS. Like everybody wanted that
thing.
Shit.
Like Israel and America both do the same thing. They do that, and they're like, "Oh man, it's getting more dangerous. Oh shit, we need to be more aggressive in our military."
I mean, Hamas is significantly more dangerous than the PLO was. The PLO was frankly kind of a clown show. I got to be honest with you. Like if you look back at it, because what they would do, they weren't really operating from any actual, and also the Palestinians. The other thing is the Palestinians themselves, as like they weren't actually involved in the fight against Israel for a long time. That really didn't start until after the Yom Kippur War, when the Arab states were essentially knocked out of it. Then the Palestinian Authority kind of started doing, you know, they weren't even in either Gaza or the West Bank. They were in Lebanon, and everybody said Yasser Arafat's not even Palestinian. He's half Egyptian. It's like, well, he's half Palestinian, half Egyptian. Whatever. That doesn't really matter. He's genetically, he's one of them, right? But his group was, they were mainly in Lebanon, and that's what the Lebanon War in the 80s was about. That was Israel's excuse to go invade Lebanon. It's like, we're going to get rid of the PLO. But what the PLO would do is they would do gay ops like in other countries. They would like, oh, there's an Israeli diplomat like in this country, let's go kill him. And they would just have like something like that. He just kills like one Jew in France or something like that. And then the Israelis would go, and that actually provoked, I think there was some op like that that actually provoked the initial Jewish invasion of Lebanon in the 80s. I think the PLO like assassinated an Israeli functionary in France, and then they're like, all right, now we're invading Lebanon. And there was a Japanese guy.
Hey, what's up? You know you're only hearing half of the show, right? And it's being indiscriminately interrupted with these sales pitches because we just don't know how else to get your attention and get you over there. Our website, our podcasts are 100% listener funded. They are funded with your subscription. So if you could please do that, help us out. therightstuff.biz/paywall. Thanks.
In the 70s, who was like, I guess he was radicalized by like the Palestinian struggle, and he became like a big supporter of them. And he like killed like, I'd have to look up this thing. Stryker was talking about it like a couple months ago. He killed like a bunch of Jews. He like shot a bunch of Israeli Jews, like 30 or 40 of them. And then he like made his escape, and they went to Lebanon, and they were like hoisting him up on chairs and shit. But that's what they would do. And then they had debacles. Like they had four PLO guys like hijack that Italian cruise ship that had some Jews on it. And they threw that Jew Leon Klinghoffer into the ocean, which is kind of funny, but like also it's not really going to hurt Israel very much. Kind of makes you play the heel when you throw like a dude in a wheelchair off the deck into the ocean. But it is kind of funny. I'm sorry. It is funny. And apparently it's because he wouldn't shut the fuck up. Like,
I believe it.
That guy is so annoyed with him. Like, all right, this guy fucking me. Like,
a guy in a wheelchair wouldn't shut the fuck up, and they threw him off the deck of the ship.
Like,
what?
Threw him off. They're like, shut the fuck up, because he just wouldn't stop screaming and yelling at him. And they were like, all right, enough. But that was that was retarded. That made the PLO look fucking stupid. So again, like, you know, when the Palestinians actually entered the fight on their own behalf, it was really, you know, and Fatah is like, I'm sorry, like I can never be more eternally disappointed in a militant group than in them. It's like, bros, like, what are you doing?
Okay, now, I gotta interrupt you with an update from Elon Musk's Twitter. You know, we're talking about Yemen. Yemen has this video that's like, Yemen tells America to bring it on. Readers added context. This is a mischaracterization. The threats to Red Sea shipping, to which the U.S.-led naval coalition is responding, have been presented by the Houthi movement, not the internationally recognized government of Yemen.
Internationally recognized government of Yemen occupies like a patch of desert that is literally useless. There's maybe like 1 pound out there.
Considered a non-state actor. Fuck you.
That's not ridiculous.
You.
Isn't that interesting?
Who has like,
piece
what
of...
are all these military parades with these missiles and shit? Where they come
from? Your imagination.
They control the capital. Well, they are the government.
Yeah. All right.
It's not a rebel movement.
Let's lunch time.
The rebellion's over. Okay. Day one.
We can look at a map. I know we gotta go. I could bring up a map of it. The thing is, in terms of percentage of territory, yeah, like the actual rebels, the Saudi backed rebels,
desert. Yes,
have a lot of it, but it's all
arid desert.
And I'm not even sure if there's oil out there.
No one's even contesting it because it's just desert. Nobody gives a fuck.
Right.
Alrighty.
So here it is. We can just, if you want to just real quick show this graphic. Then just to get, just for some context for the viewers, Boys Oil and I showed this last night. We'll show it again. There it is. That's the territory in green is the Yemeni government, and the territory in red is the Saudi backed rebels, and the territory in yellow is another group of Saudi backed rebels.
Hey, that's so. Where's the population centers? Oh,
well, all right. Those little bubbles are the population centers. So Sana'a right. is the capital, and then like
look at that
Al Hudaydah. Is another
look at that
one.
Sea of pink with literally nothing in most of it. There's like a little cluster right there, and then whole big enormous chunks of it have literally no human life.
Yeah, and those are probably just like little villages along that. Along
yeah, no,
that
those,
one
those,
little river.
Those are tiny little villages that are clustered right there. Congratulations, you have a desert and a tiny village in the middle of it. Good job.
You have Al Gaida.
Oh, that place looks kind of cool, actually.
This is sort of like the what the New York Times and like all of this like Washingtonian like bullshit like
I'm
media
gonna
sources
like
to
take you to Al Gaida. Gaida. No, you don't want to go to Al Gaida over here.
That's actually weird. That little town, Tarim, right there, where they in the middle of the rebel held territory.
Yeah, 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 sure.
It actually looks kind of cool. It's all carved out of stone, out of the rocks and shit. But it's obviously in the middle of the fucking desert. And it's not very big.
It's like fucking Tatooine and shit. Like this is where the Tatooine. Real star. That's where the real Star Wars fucking cosplay happens. You're a new fag. It's like Jakku. All right. I'm starving. Take a quick. I can't find my drop now because I had Twitter open. All right. We'll be back in a few.
You are listening to the Daily Shower, as racist and sexist as they can be. We're gonna offend you, isn't it funny? Laugh!